Boker Tov, we can get started. I see. Welcome. Okay, so hopefully, please God, today we'll actually finish the bracha of Hashiva Shofteinu, the restoration of our judges. We spoke about what type of judges, how difficult. Now we'll talk about the judgment itself a little bit, and then if we're lucky, we'll begin Bilam Al Shinim, the next bracha, which of course the added bracha of the Shmon Esrei, the 19th bracha. Okay, so I want to begin the difficulty. We ask God to restore our justice system. We have Tekab Shofar Gadol, right? We're in the second half, right? We said a few times, but it's always good to review that the middle brachot of the Shmon Esrei divide into six and six. The first six are personal brachot. You know, we ask for wisdom and forgiveness and health and wealth. And the second half are national requests. And we begin with the return of the Jewish people to Tekab Shofar Gadol L'Charitenu, and we should all come back. Habet Nidachenu Yachan Me'er Bakam Batart, which Baruch Hashem is happening in before our eyes. And then we go in. And once we come back, the first thing is justice, because we've discussed how before Matan Torah we have Yitro, can't have the Aseret Hadibrot without setting up a judiciary. And in Sefer Dvarim, as Moshe prepares the Jewish people to enter the land of Israel, the first mitzvot he talks about is having a proper justice system. Lo takir panim b'mishpat, do not show favoritism, and the doesn't matter big cases, small cases, the strict requirements of justice, that's the requirement. Then that is a very important idea. We spoke last week that all the evil in the world, it's an amazing gemara, I hope it's exaggeration, but all the evil in the world that happens is because of corrupt judges in the Jewish people. And we know power corrupts. Judges have a lot of power. And we know that if you want a strong democracy, you need a strong judiciary system. And that's what the rabbis were very concerned with, the how difficult that is. And that's why we say the bracha three times a day, that we should have Shofteinu like we used to have, like in the good old days. I know that's often, our perception of what it was like. The grass is always greener with the way it used to be. I know that's not the exact expression, but we glorified the past. But in this case, it's true. And of course, we said the role of the justice is to remove yagun vanachat, to prevent suffering. That's the role of justice. Now, the problem is, and then we asked, we said, that's where we began. There's sort of a slight contradiction. Then we say, umlach aleinu atal levadcha, but only God should rule over us. I don't understand that we're praying for, obviously, justices are humans, so they're, in a sense, ruling over us because we have to follow their rulings. And that we say, Mloch Aleinu. So I wouldn't say it's not exactly a contradiction, but of course, the idea, on the one hand, we have the judges, they do their best. But ultimately, we want God to be our ruler, and God is the one, Melech Ohev Tzedakah U'Mishpat. It's God who gives Tzedakah U'Mishpat, in a sense. And the role of the judges is to take on God's, to be God's partners. That's what we discussed last week. That's why the Torah uses the word Elohim as a judge. In Parshat Mishpatim, Elohim Yakriv Divrei Shneim, or whatever the exact wording is, that Ad Elohim Yavod Var Shneim, unto God the case should come. What do you mean unto God? It's unto the judges. But that's, of course, it's a beautiful idea that we refer to judges as God, and that's what our bracha is saying, the relationship between God and the human judges. Now, of course, as Rav Soloveitchik points out, no human judge can ever give pure justice. So that's what I want to talk about a little bit today. First of all, I mean, the Rav says in the real world, there's never a case where somebody's 100% right and 100% wrong. In every argument there, in every court dispute and everything, there's always even somebody who's a criminal and does terrible things. There's always some slight mitigating factor. There's always this. It's something, you'd have a dispute, you know, a misunderstanding of the contract. This one thought that, this one thought this. Obviously, so we have to rule. And sometimes you're 51% of the case. What are the expressions in a civil case? In a criminal case, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. But in a civil case, the lawyers can help me out. The standard of evidence is much lower. It's preponderance of evidence. I don't know what the exact expression is. You don't need beyond a reasonable doubt, but there is going to be a reasonable doubt. You don't, or you don't know 100%, or we know he's 60% right, but he'll win 100% of the money. The only
61%.
Right. You could be with 51%, you get 100% of
Yeah.
the, I mean, take any, it's not their issue, but any election, you win 51% of the vote, you get 100% of the power. Balance of probability. Thank you, Larry. Okay. It's nice to have a few lawyers on board. Okay. So, but Rav Soloveitchik points A, there's never strict, you know, this one's right, this one's wrong. B, I mentioned something else that I didn't see this here directly, Rav Soloveitchik, but I remember my high school teacher, Rav Tabori, my high school Rosh Yeshiva, saying once that, you know, and I think on the Pasuk, El Emunah Ve'Ein Avel, it's a Pasuk saying Hazinu, God is a true judge, there's no problems, you know, he has no imperfections. And he said, you know, even if justice is 100% right, you can never take in, a human being can never take into account all the side effects. Some guys, you know, has to go to jail for 20 years. Well, what about his family? What about his wife? His wife and kids are going to suffer. Okay, there's nothing we can do about it. I'm not saying we don't send him to jail, but that's like the kids. Like, what do they do wrong? And their life gets messed up. Even carrying the same name, you know, as a famous criminal, you know, is very unfair to people. But what can you do? That's the world of that's the world we live in. We live in a world that is not completely just, and that's in a sense what we're praying for, the world where God is a true judge. That's where we can only find our justice. It's because of this, we'll take a look at the Gemara that I think I alluded to at the end of the shiur last week. I mentioned that most of the time, Batei Dinim, a Jewish court, recommends that we don't do a Din Torah. When you go to a Din Torah, you know, to come to rule on a case, say, we're not going to follow strict justice. What does that mean? We're not going to follow exactly what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. We're going to do what we call a pshara. We're going to compromise. I don't know if that's the exact word. Pshara in modern Hebrew means lukewarm. It means a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Of course, it means nobody's happy. Nobody's totally happy. That's how you always know it's a good compromise, when neither side is excited, but both sides find it acceptable. That's in any negotiations. That's how it has to work. And in a sense, that's what we seem to recommend, or we'll take a look now at what the Gemara says. This is what we generally do in a Din Torah, which of course means you don't have, that's what it means, is you don't have to follow everything it says in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, hey, but you know, it's okay. In this case, we don't really think A applies. A is not really fair, because as we say, a legal system can never take into account all the people that fall in between. You know, always, all the time, like you go through a traffic light at 3 in the morning, the legal system is you get a ticket, like going through in rush hour. And maybe that is what is supposed to happen, but we all understand it's not quite the same thing. So on a more serious level, these things happen. You're dealing with widows, or you're dealing with poor people, rich people. So it's true, and the Torah says it makes no difference. But we know in real life, it does make a difference. Someone who is lacks economic means, it's a very different situation from white collar crime, is in a sense, even though we punish it less, these guys, white collar crime, who are very wealthy and then do fraud to steal more money, in a sense is much, much worse than the guy who might even rob a bank. Rob a bank is ooh, that's awful. But it's more understandable, let's say, if somebody doesn't have money, or shoplifting. Somehow we, I don't know. I don't, do people view shoplifting worse than white collar crime? I don't know how they view it. But anyway, so let's take a look at the Gemara. And it's an interesting Gemara. And it also ties in, of course, to Parshat HaShavua. Not of course, but it's just nice that it does. Okay, where are we going here? Okay, so this is a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Or, I mean, this is the beginning of the discussion here, but it's really a continuation of a discussion. And so it's like, you know, in the Gemara, this Sharmash Bankash. This is like, this is a mnemonic device. You know, remember, even when the Gemara was written, there's all, even when the Mishnah was written, it was still probably learned orally by most people. And of course, they didn't have any printing. It was very hard to get, you know, who owned a Talmud in the 4th century. So they had mnemonic devices. So, Siman, that would, so, you know, one would be Samach Reish Mem, would be the heading of the next topics. I actually didn't go through to know which ones they are, but Bankash, you have this all the time in the Gemara. It tells you what the next 9 paragraphs in the Talmud are going to be talking about. Okay. So Rav Elezer ben Osher, Rav Yussi, Glilim, Asur Litzoa. It's forbidden to compromise. Justice is justice. That's what it means in this context. We saw it, the cut, really. But it's forbidden. One who compromises. How do they translate it in English? Anyone mediates. Okay. But it means you don't follow you go to arbitration panel, whatever you want to call it. Somebody says this is really good. We're going to bless him. He's cursing. It's a curse. One who blesses the one who compromises, Nietz Hashem, he curses God. So this is, he doesn't go for this. Justice is justice. Don't tell me compromise. You have to know. You have to do what the law says. That's the way law has to work. Ella Yikov Adin Et Ha'aretz. It's a beautiful expression. The law has to pierce the mountain. Go straight through. Doesn't care who it damages in the middle. Justice is justice. Yikov Adin Et Ha'aretz. A kav, like a straight line. The law goes straight through the mountain, knocks out everybody who may be standing in the way, and we just do what is justice. Shenemar kemishpat Elohim. We're carrying out God's will. You can't compromise on God, what God wants. That you have to do the justice of God. V'chein Moshe hayomer. So that was very interesting. Moshe, this was Moshe's approach. Yikov Adin Adar. Moshe, we know Moshe Rabbeinu. The Jewish people are dancing around the golden calf. He breaks the tablets. Aaron, okay, get you. We'll do something. We know, everybody knows that Aaron HaKohen, he lied. That's everybody. We're supposed to, Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. He would lie a little bit to preserve peace. It's okay. You don't have to have strict justice. But Moshe Rabbeinu, Yikov Adin Atar. Aval, and the language is so powerful to me, and it's clear what the editors think. Aval Aaron, this was Moshe, but Aaron was different. Aaron was Ohev Shalom and Arodeh Shalom. It's like, this clearly, I don't know, I think it's clearly a critique in the sense of Moshe. Moshe wanted strict justice, but you know what? Aaron, he loved peace, like as if Moshe didn't love peace, which in a sense is true. Moshe would see injustice. He's an Egyptian beating up a Hebrew and he kills the Egyptian. That's not really justice. Can't do that. You have to, Moshe is the man. We know he had a little bit, it's true. The commentaries pointed out, maybe people don't like saying it. He had a temper. He was hot-headed and it cost him. That's why he hit the rock or he yelled at the Jewish people. He lost his chance to go into Israel. He was a man, Moshe Emet. Truth and peace, we know, cannot coexist. Emet v'shalom. We've spoken about that in the past. The last pasuk in the Haftorah, we read how we Emet v'hashalom ahevo. We don't read in the Haftorah. It's in Zechariah when he says the fast soma revit, soma chamishin, soma tziri, but soma shviv, but soma tziri. The four fasts relating to the destruction of the temple in exile. That's Som Gedalia, Shiva Sar v'tamuz, Tisha B'Av and Asar B'Tevet all relate to exile. They will one day be days of peace and joy, and there'll be holidays when we come back to Israel. That was the question. Do you have to celebrate, do you have to observe Tisha B'Av? That question came up. We discussed it in 1967, 1948. Maybe we don't observe Tisha B'Av anymore. Or maybe Shiva Sar Tammuz. Let's say Tisha B'Av be too much. These were serious questions. The assumption is during the Second Temple, they didn't observe Tisha B'Av. What are observing Tisha B'Av for the destruction of the First Temple? We have a temple now. The temple wasn't as glorious as the first one. Big deal. And then the pasuk continues, Ha'emet v'hashalom ahavo. You should love truth and peace. And as Rav Soloveitchik quotes his father, that this is otherworldly. In this world, peace and truth cannot totally coexist. And that's a famous midrashim. Truth said, God don't create the world. Man's a liar, and we're full of deceit. But even if we weren't, peace means you have to compromise. You have to give up on the truth. But Aaron loved peace. Umesim shalom bein adam lechaverushin emar Torah Hashem aitav v'fiyu v'avlo yimasav bisvatav. It's very interesting. The Torah of truth was on his mouth. In other words, even though they're talking about peace, ultimate truth is not truth. It's truth of peace, I guess, if that makes sense. In other words, Avla nonim sab bisvatav b'shalom v'mishor halach. He walked in the pathway of straight and peace. V'rabim he be'eshim yevon, and he returned many from sin. This is the end of Tanakh. It's in Malachi. It's a beautiful verse, and it's basically talking about the role of the Kohen. of course, Aaron being the first Kohen, that the role of the Kohen is to bring peace among the Jewish people. The role of the Navi is to castigate the people and to tell them what they're doing wrong. But that's the role of the Navi and the role of the Kohen are quite different. Okay, so that's what the Gemara says. By the way, just to connect it to this week's parsha, then we'll come back to this. The Gemara says two things here. Harisha Gazal Seas Bechitim, if you steal wheat and you make bread and you make a bracha, you're not allowed to make. That's a curse. It's like you steal a lulav, that's no mitzvah. So if you steal the bread, you steal money, God's not interested in you making a bracha. And then the Gemara says, Lo nemar botseya la keneged Yehuda. The word botseya, that David HaMelech, this is a pasuk in Tehillim, was said against Yehuda. Shenemar bayomer Hashem, we're going to read it tomorrow. Ma betza kina rokadachina. What do we gain? Oh, that's the way it's in that. Ma betza kina rokadachina. And, you know what? It was a cost benefit analysis, and these was heavily criticized, as you hear, see here by the rabbis. Somebody says Yehuda did something nice. He saved his life. The brothers were going to kill him. So no. Reuven had already said we're not going to kill him, and Yehuda just said it's also the expression of ma betza kina rokat achinu. It's the Kohel calculated thing. Had it been in their interest to kill him, they would have. This wasn't the moral statement. He would have just said, you know what? What do we need to kill him for? Just kill him. The Egyptians will get rid of him. The Ishmaelim will take it. And that's it. Yosef will be gone. And we don't have to be the ones who spill blood. So, Harezim and Aetz. Anybody who praises Yehuda is really cursing. Okay, so that's really powerful. But let's get back to her. I think I just want to point out Tosfot and then we'll come back here. So Tosfot says, I think I have it here, about Aaron was different, right? Aaron was different. So Tosfot says, why does this not come up? I don't know. Commentary, Tosfot says about Aaron, Perish Shalohayat Dayan. Very interesting. Tosfot says, Aaron wasn't a judge. So therefore, he didn't have to judge pure truthfulness. This could not be done because Aaron wasn't a judge. He was allowed to search for peace, something that's not true by Moshe. So this is what Tosfot I think is driving at is as follows: the concept of lifnei meshurat hadin, acting before the strangeness of the God. So what do we always say? How do you translate lifnei meshurat hadin? How do most people translate it? How would you translate to act lifnei meshurat hadin? Right, I'm sure people have heard that expression. Somebody, nobody. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid.
Translated as beyond the letter of the law, even though
beyond the letter of the law, doing more than the law requires, the spirit of the law, whatever. Right, that's all true. I think right. Doing more than the law requires. That's how we normally translate the halakha is a. But I'm a nice guy. I'm going to do more. Okay. I think though, if you look at the words and you see what the Gemara we just learned, it means something a little bit more powerful. Lifnin mishurat hadin means before the strictness of the law. We just learned that the law, yikov hadin et tahar, that the law is straight. It goes straight through the mountain. What it means is like this. A Jew should act, solve his problems before he gets to court. He has to act lifnin before shurat hadin. When you into a line, and a straight line doesn't take into consideration anything. Yikov adin et tahar. When you're out of court, you can do whatever you want. I don't have to sue you, right? This is the difference, of course, between, you know, money and religious law, between civil law and religious law, between Chosha Mishpat and Yoredea, right? I break your window and I owe you $500. So, you know, I was playing baseball and, you know, it was a mistake and I hit like 300 feet and I broke your window. Wow, the guy's very impressed. I'm very impressed that you could hit the ball 300 feet. So he broke my window. He's a fancy, he's a millionaire and the guy's not, it's in the other neighborhood, you know, 300 feet in the poor neighborhood. I don't know. So, you can't afford, your parents can't afford the $500, so I won't make you pay. That's very nice. That's lifnin, mishurat hadin. If they went to court, so that's a prohibition in the Torah. That's a prohibition in the Torah to favor the poor over the wealthy. We've discussed this before. There's a prohibition in the Torah to favor the wealthy and a prohibition to favor the poor. It's such a beautiful idea because some people favor the poor. You know, they have Rachmanis and he's poor. Let's say, we know, I don't want to get into politics, but I think everybody can know which political parties in the United States, which one prefers helping cutting taxes for the poor and who wants to cut taxes on the rich. And the wealthy. So that is a difference. Some people favor the poor and some people favor the rich. Each one has their own reason. And Torah says both are wrong. I mean, I'm not talking about tax policy, but that's a different story. But that's wrong. You have to do what's fair. You have to do what's right. So, but that's once you're in a court. But if you're lifnim, if you're before you get to court, that's what lifnim ashur hadin means. Before the case gets to court, you should act in a way because the court can't say, well, you know, it wasn't his fault. It was a mistake. Because in halakha, you're totally responsible for what you do. Something that I think the world has to know a little bit, right? The halakha says even if you sleepwalk and you cause damage, it's an amazing halakha. The Mishnah in Bava Metzia, I think. If you go sleepwalking and you damage something, you gotta make sure you don't go sleep. If you're afraid you're gonna sleepwalk, put a rope around your bed and tie yourself in so you don't go sleepwalking, or lock the door so you can't get out. Do whatever you can. In other words, you're always responsible. Adam muad la'olam. That's the expression. A man is always muad. You know, we use that by an animal. In other words, it's accustomed to do damage. An ox, you put an ox, it's gonna hurt people because that's what it does and it's normal. That's fine. That's what we expect it to do. So a man is the same thing. Adam muad la'olam. A person is always causing damage, always responsible for what they do. So you're 100. So the court can never take anything into consideration. But if you're lifnim mishurat hadin before you get to the straight in the court, then you can do it. Yes, Morris. I think more.
You say can't take things in consideration, but there's requirements like of warning of a traw. And Shnei,
that's only for
so like if you sleepwalk in the middle of the night and you have blood on your hands, you're not going to be guilty.
No. Very good. More, everything you say is true in a criminal case. In a rich, that's if I want to convict somebody of murder or for some crime in order to punish the person, a ritual sin. But when I deal with monetary sin, there's no warning. Because remember, in a monetary sin, it's usually it's a zero sum game. One person wins, one person loses, right? It's very different than when somebody's on trial for something he did, you know, for murder or something. There you need warning to give a punishment. You don't need warning in a civil case. If I throw a ball through your window, I don't have to be warned. That's gone. Adam muad la'olam. I'm pre-warned. That's in this sense, that's what it means. A man is always responsible. No warning is needed. That whole concept of warning, that's when the somebody murders somebody. That's what the context is always, the Gemara says. So it's so hard to convict a person of murder because you got to warn them right before and to witness it. And he's got to accept the warning and he's got to kill the person within 2 seconds of the warning or it doesn't count. But that has no bearing on a commercial or a civil case.
So there's no kavana required to commit like a mens rea we have in like a common system, like for a
criminal. I don't know the legal concept you're referring to exactly, but no, there's no concept. As far as I'm aware, there is zero concept in halakha when it comes to civil damage of any form of warning. I mean, that the classic case of, you know, of lifnim mishurat hadin, the most, although the Gemara doesn't use that expression, you know, the wine barrel case. That's the most, that's the case that's most often quoted. It's an even higher level. That's the case where workers were transporting a barrel of wine and they broke the barrel of wine and their Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, the rabbi was the owner of the factory, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, is a wealthy rabbi. He owned the wine factory and he took the workers, said, okay, you owe me $1,000. You broke the barrel of wine. They get paid $100 a day and they did cost $1,000 of damage. So they owe the boss, I guess, $1,000. That's $900 to $1,000. So they couldn't pay. So the Rabbi Bar Bar Chana took their coats as a collateral. Okay, yeah, I'll take something of value so I can get paid. And the workers went running to Rav and they said, Rav, we want our coats back. And said, so he said, Rav Rechana said, well, they broke my wine barrels. So it says, give him back your coats. He said, is that the law? He said, no, that's not the law. But he quoted a pasuk in Mishlei, Orchat Sadikim, the way of the path, I forget the exact verse now, and that's the way of the righteous. And then they said, and then the worker said, okay, we got our quotes back, but we didn't get paid. We worked the whole day, we didn't get paid. We want our $100. So the Rabbi Baruch said, yeah, we're mined. I'm going to pay you, you pay me. It's bad enough, you don't have to pay me. I'm not paying you. Rav said, pay them. He says, is that the halacha? He said, no, that's not the halacha. But you have to act that way. So that's the classic case. Bava Metzia, I think 83A or 85A. That's where that case is described. And that's the most famous case. Although the Tosfot points out that's even beyond Lifnei Mishurat Hadin. Lifnei Mishurat Hadin means I don't have to give up so much money. That's why the pasuk says Orchat Tzadikim or some the path of a tzaddik. A tzaddik is willing to pay somebody even when you caused me damage and I pay you. That's going to, so that's be, the Lifnei Mishurat Hadin has its limits. How much beyond I have to go? How much should I compromise before we get to court? But that's in the higher case. But there's no warning involved. I break something of yours. You don't warn me, don't break it. And if I break it, no, when you break something, you got to pay for it. That's the halacha. But anyways, it's a very powerful idea here. But the idea of Lifnei Mishurat Hadin really means that to act before you get to court. Because once you get to court, you're finished. Now, what the Gemara is then discussing is the court allowed to act Lifnei Mishurat Hadin. That's how I think Rav Soloveitchik explains that Pshara is really a court of Lifnei Mishurat Hadin. So normally a court is not allowed to do such a thing. It's forbidden. It's against the Torah. Torah says you just, after the case is over, the Gemara says, after the case is over, you go to the wealth guy, says, you won the case, but come on, be a mensch. Are you going to take $1,000 from this poor guy? Give me a break. Don't do that. But in the court case, that's a Torah prohibition to rule against him, even though it's the right thing to do. Right. Law and morality don't always agree. That's life. We know that. I was just reading, actually, Mark Shapiro's last article in the Sfarim blog that came out this week. So he quoted from some Hasidic Rebbeim, the Ishbitzer, I think some of the Rebbeim was said, it was a fascinating article. You should read it. You can read it. He's talking about how sometimes the will of God and the law of God are not the same. In other words, sometimes what God, the Torah says you have to do and what God wants you to do actually contradict each other. It's a fascinating idea, but it really is true because the law is generic, is general. And sometimes God would not want you to follow the law, but a court means it's a court of law. So the court cannot impose the will of God. That you can only do before you get to court, lifnim, before you get to the straightness of the law. Now, what a pshara is, if the two litigants agree, they will let the court rule lifnim mishurat hadin. So you cannot impose it. You cannot force them. A person has the right to demand strict justice. But the bad day dinim here is, as I understand, thank God I've never been to, never been involved in a din Torah. But more thank God for a general case, in secular court. It's a question. We'll get back there in a minute. They encourage. That's the machloket. The first opinion was it's forbidden. No, the court's not allowed to suggest pshara, and that's Moshe's approach, so to speak. But we follow the opinion that no, it's the proper thing to do, even in a court of law, is to agree that you're not going to necessarily follow 100% what the legal system would do. It's what we might call an arbitration panel in English. And without getting into it, I think I mentioned last week, it's a very important, subject, but it's a little beyond. I know we go beyond often what's strictly in the sitter, but this is a little bit beyond too much. And then we require much more thinking and work is what exactly is the status of a secular court today. It's not so simple that it's, we know a Jew's not supposed to go to a secular court. And it's considered in the Torah a pretty serious prohibition. It's right after the Seret HaDibrot, Vela Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifneihem. These are the laws to put before you. So the pshat of the verse is right after Mount Sinai, we have a whole bunch of civil law. But the Gemara has an additional level of interpretation. You should put before them, before the court of law, Velo Lifnei Akum. You shouldn't go to a secular. That's the question. Is it a secular court? Is it a pagan court? Whatever, without getting into it, because we have Dina de Mahut Dina. So the problem is, I'll be perfectly blunt, is we don't have enough Batei Dinim that are professionalized. I don't want to get into the whole system. It's not really for us, but people should know. It's very important that there have to, Baruch Hashem, the RCA Beit faculty, and with what I know about it, is very professionally done. They have rules and procedures, like in a real court. They tell you in advance what's going, but not everything works like that. And you know what a sabla system is? I remember when we learned Sanhedrin, I mentioned, with Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, the one year I was in Shir when I was in Gruss. So, you know, at first I didn't know what he was talking about. Sabla, sabla, sabla this, sabla that. So Zabla Zebor Eloecha v'Zebor Eloecha. It's the beginning of the third parak in Sanhedrin. The third parak in Sanhedrin, how do you determine who's on a court? It's very interesting. So the Mishnah says Zebor Eloecha. One litigant chooses one. V'Zebor Eloecha. Then this litigant chooses one. So each one feels they have someone looking out for their interest, because I chose who the judge is. And the two of them, probably the two judges, then choose a third judge. So without getting into why, that's so most of the people today say Zabla is awful. To do Zabla leads to corruption. In theory, even though it was the system in the time of the Mishnah, that's not the system they use today, where you get to choose who's going to sit on your court. I mean, Zebor Eloecha v'Zebor Eloecha. But that's the old system. So whatever. But we all know the concept of Lifnim Rishut Din and acting, and you have to have a really proper legal system. And unfortunately, the Bate Din system never developed or hasn't developed to the same way. And I know, for better or for worse, whatever, many Jews, many observant Jews, will near a Beit Din, and they're not always wrong. And that's a sad thing to say, but it sometimes is true. And I don't know if any of the lawyers we don't have to get into now, have experience, but that's what this prayer is. It's a very difficult prayer. I should have strict, proper judges who have to be trained. And we also mentioned that a judge has to know what's going on. We mentioned last week that Din Emet L'Amito means Lefi HaMakom L'Fi HaZman. So the judges have to be very aware of the sign in which you live. In the article I just quoted by Mark Shapiro, he mentioned something that a number of great poskim said is a very interesting idea. To me, it's obvious, but when you see it like right in front of your face, he says when there is a debate between rabbis, even though the halakha may be an A for many years, he quotes the name in the Sri Leish, says this, Rabbi Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg, the great posek in the middle of the 20th century, that sometimes you have to follow the psak that makes the most sense in the culture in which you live. Moral values change over time. So, and that's not always bad. Reb Cook, I mean, a lot of people felt there's been advancement in morality. And there is advancement in morality, despite the world we live in. There's a much greater recognition of many human rights and all kinds of things in a positive sense. And so he says sometimes the halakha has to say, you know, maybe in the 14th century it was okay. I don't know. And maybe it's not a good example. Maybe in the 14th century it's okay to say a woman should leave her house once a month, like it says in the Rambam, that a proper woman leaves her house once a month. You say that today, you're like a misogynist. It's a terrible thing to say. It's awful. I don't care you're quoting a Rambam. Please give me a break. You know, we live in a totally different world of the Rambam. So that's what the Sri Leish, others are writing. The Posek has to be aware of the society in which they live. And when you issue a ruling, and when there's about, you have to know who to choose, what to choose. You can't be divorced from the world at large. Okay, enough of that. It's an important, justice is really important. And I think it's a communal responsibility to ensure we have proper Bate Din, and that people can feel confident that they'll get true justice and fair justice and, you know, proper arbitration, whatever words you want to use, when they go to a Din Torah, and the people are aware. That's why the RCA Beit Din, whenever there's a real estate dispute, they'll have a real estate lawyer as one of the judges. When whatever the issue is, they'll have somebody in that field as one of the judges, because it's important. If you don't have a tremendous grasp of how every industry works in its own way, and you talk in certain, everybody, you know, there's the language rabbis talk, and there's the language, there's legalese, everybody knows there's legalese, and there's rabbis, I don't know what the word is, you know, we mentioned many times, right, there's the rabbis of the Gemara. There's no way in the world they thought Daf Yomi would ever catch on. Had they been aware that Daf Yomi would come up, they would have, I'm exaggerating. He did cut out lots of stuff when it appeared in the Gemara. Because the Gemara says things, when you learn Daf Yomi for the first time, it's quite shocking for people. Because the put downs that they have and the comments, the harshness that they often spoke with one another. But that was the norm. That was the accepted, that everybody understood that. The rabbis, as an outsider reading it, this is terrible. How could a rabbi talk like this? And whatever, there's no way in the world. Rabbis were talking to rabbis. It's like people who know what the yeshivas were like 100 years ago, not what they're like today. The students ran the place. The students would, they would, I mean, you know, or the rabbin would tell students, oh, you're an idiot. That's a really, you know, yeah, I'm sure you all had teachers. That's a klutz kasha. Only a fool would ask such a question. Today, a teacher says that they fired the teacher. They disciplined the teacher. I say that we have to be concerned with the kids' feelings. And okay, I mean, maybe our kids, maybe we have to learn to have a little bit thicker skin. But the idea is, no, we've changed. Our society has changed. And you can no longer tell a kid, or maybe at least maybe in advance, okay, these were advanced yeshiva, only the elite of the elite went. They went with the elite of the elite. Okay, but that's how they used to talk. You know, and I mean, I don't read Yaakov Kamenetsky's book. Why do you think they banned this book, The Making of a Gadol? Read what people said about Rav Aaron Cutler and that. People had very harsh things to say about other rabbis, and because that was the world in which they lived. To an outsider, it's very difficult. But anyways, so it's very important that our judges be totally attuned to what's going on in the world, and that's hard work. And the community has to invest. You have to invest in people. You have to invest, you know, in producing not just rabbis and, you know, with, whatever, who are very learned but are very knowledgeable. And, you know, it's the one that what Rabbi Weissman from the RCA Beit in Beverly Hills, dealing, you know, he went to Columbia Law School and he worked on Wall Street for a couple of years. And now he runs the Beit Din of America. It's a beautiful thing. So he totally understands, obviously, American law. He has work experience in, you know, on Wall Street and whatever. And now he's working to bring justice to the world. That's a beautiful thing. Okay, let's go on. Any questions, comments? I see how to access the article by Mark Shapiro. Yeah, I can show it later. Go just type in the sparring blog. If you're not aware what the sparring blog is, I'll keep you busy for the next year and a half catching up on articles that I've been reading. The sparring blog was started, I don't know, 15 years ago by I forget the names. Dan Rabinowitz. It was started as sort of an analysis of Sfarim, but it's really, I would say, it's very high level, you know, intellectual, sophisticated stuff with some great people who write there on all kinds of fascinating topics and just, you know, and Sfarim. So they call it the Sfarim blog. So Mark Shapiro writes, he just had an article. He's written many articles over the years, but they really have some really fascinating articles. It can really keep you busy for a long, long time. So, you know, the articles sometimes come out. Sometimes it can be a month apart, but they're scholarly. The articles are like a very high level and whatever. But you can just type in the Sfarim blog and you'll find it. Just let me take a look. Shoplifting. Okay, here. Shoplifting isn't considered a crime. Is that true? Shoplifting is not a crime? I find that hard to believe.
California. Wow.
Yeah. Really? Shoplifting is not, what do you mean it's not a crime? How can
they won't arrest
crime?
You.
That's a different story. Shoplifters are more likely to go to jail than white-collar criminals. So here we have Makloket. What's going on? Right, that's, I am, okay. All right. Very good. Shoplifting is a crime in all states. Okay. Restorative justice. Yeah, restorative justice, what's that exactly? That's when you're like to restore a past wrong, like kind of like affirmative action. Is that what it means? What's restorative justice?
South Africa.
Right. Right. So when wrongs have happened in the past, you try to do it. So that's an interesting thing, right? Yeah, what does the halakha have to say about that? I mean, how do we have a statute of limitations in halakha? I don't know. I have to think about this a little more. We're very concerned with quick justice. It's considered inui hadin. You know, the idea of death row, you know, and they have one chapter on the four ways they give. Each one gets its own chapter. You know, the laws of chenech, cherek, sreifa, skila, who gets it, how they do it, and what the court procedure is. But it's always the conviction happens in the day and the death sentence is carried out the next day. They had overnight. They weren't allowed to sleep. They weren't allowed to eat. They had to look for maybe a way to get them off, but they had to kill them the next day in theory, because this idea that somebody would languish for more than a day on death row was cruel. Well, we say, you know, cruel and punishments in the U.S. Constitution or something, that I don't know, one of the amendments.
Unusual.
I'm sure. Right. So that's considered cruel. So we believe in very quick justice. That was Yitro's complaint onto Moshe. You need many judges. Ashiva Shoftena. We need Shoftena. We need many judges, because otherwise you can't carry out any justice. So Moshe Rabbeinu, that's what Yitro said. The question is, though, but if you don't do that, can you go back 10 years? Probably. I mean, I don't know that there's any, I'm not aware that there is an official statute of limitations in halakha. I mean, the only thing we have, of course, is Shemitah cancels monetary debts. But it doesn't cancel debts to the state, so to speak, the Beitin. Does it cancel a debt that somebody, I actually don't know this. I have to look this up. Thank you. If somebody steals $1,000, so the luck is they have to pay back $2,000, right? That's the classic halakha in Judaism. If they mug you, if they do white collar crime, they have to pay double. If they do blue collar crime, I don't know what the words are, they have to pay you single, right? A mugger who puts a gun to your back and says, hand me your wallet, when you give him $1,000, when they catch him, no fine, just gives back the $1,000. I know to us this sounds very weird, but it's the famous halakha. But if he's a white collar criminal, he sneaks into your house at night, but that's like a white collar criminal, where he tries to hide his crime, then he pays double. And the Gemara explained, because the guy puts a gun to your head, I can respect him. He doesn't care. God, man, nothing. The gun of what a hypocrite. He's afraid of man. He has to sneak. God, who cares about God? He's not afraid of God. He puts man ahead of God. So because of that, and it's something, of course, really a lot of to think about that a lot. But that's the famous halakha, that because the ganav puts man ahead of God, he's afraid of man but not God. So we whip him and we make him pay double. So now he's got to pay $2,000. Is that debt canceled in Shemitah? My gut feeling tells me no, but I don't know that 100%. Maybe somebody can look it up. I'll try to look it up for next week. But a loan is canceled in the Shemitah. That probably doesn't count as a loan. And I imagine it's not canceled in Shemitah. There may be a Mishnah. I'm forgetting, but that's just an interesting case. I'm not aware of a statute of limitation anyways in any case. Okay. Nathan Rosen just put this farming blog there. Okay. Let's just finish up here. I say, oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. Long time on compromise, justice, lifnim reshut hadin, but it's really important. It's a really important bracha, and it's something we haven't done really in 1900 years. Yes, we had batei din throughout Jewish history, of course, always. And the batei din, by the way, had a lot of power. You know, in Spain, they did occasionally, from what I understand, they did occasionally give a death penalty in Spain. I'll tell you another thing they used to do, talk about changing morality. This is, we know, in Tshuvat HaRashba, I believe, they used to sometimes in Spain, if you sinned, they would chop off your ear, chop off your nose. They did physical mutilation. Today, we would consider that just totally unacceptable. And if the Rashba was alive, he'd also probably consider it totally unacceptable. In the Middle Ages, we lived in a medieval world. That wasn't totally unacceptable. And that's what these poskim are saying, that the halakha, there's a moral advancement in the world. I know some people may be troubled by that. Think the Torah, what do you mean? What do you mean moral? No, there is moral advancement in the world. And even if it's not always advancement, there's moral changes. Yeah.
In Chumash, we say, you should go to Shofer Esher Yebayim Imahim.
Correct. That's exactly what we're saying. Beautiful. Yeah, that sounds the best. But it just doesn't mean, obviously, you have to go to Yebayim, you can't go to a dead Shofer. But it means he's got to know. What the Gemara there says is, even though he's a lower judge, we're going to rabbis of today. Where's Rav Moshe Feinstein? Where are the great Peskin? It doesn't matter. Yiftach Bedoro. Kishmuel Bedoro. If Yiftach, you know, Yiftach who sacrificed his daughter, you know, he wasn't such a great guy. But Nunu, that's who you go to. Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmuel Bedoro. But it also, of course, means, that's what we said last week, L'fi HaMakom, L'fi HaZman, it means Bayamim Ahem. The judge is living in the modern world. That's why you're not allowed to. That's why, listen, that's why so many people were against codes of laws and even Shaila Pichuvot. And I've mentioned many, many times, but it's worth repeating. That's Rav Moshe Feinstein's introduction to the Igra Moshe. I'm going to disagree with rabbis before me who are greater than I. I don't say I'm as good as the Chatham Sofer, but it doesn't matter. Not only am I allowed to, I'm obligated to disagree. And I've quoted many times. Rav Schechter used to tell this all the time, quoted the name of Rav Chaim Valashin, the great student of the Vilna Gaon, the founder of the Valashin Yeshiva. It says in the Torah, in Dvarim, when Moshe is introducing the justice system, the beginning of Dvarim, where they're going to go into the land of Israel, Lo tagur mifnei ish, do not be afraid of anybody. And he says, he quotes, I think, in the name of the Vilna Gaon, if you work out something, and you come to the conclusion different to the Shulchan Aruch. I'm not talking me, some idiot. I'm talking about a serious person. Rav Moshe Feinstein comes out, he disagrees with the Shulchan Aruch. And you say, I can't rule this way because the Shulchan Aruch says different. Yosef Karo was also an ish. Lo tagur mifnei ish. You're not allowed to forget. And we all know in the Lithuanian world, the traditional psak was, they didn't care. I mentioned last week, Rav Schechter told, we don't believe in precedent. And where Rav Schechter said, halacha does not believe in precedent. And I think that would come as shocking to people, because everybody said, that's all halacha is. We just do what our tradition tells us. It's not a contradiction. I mean, so when you ask a shah, just because some rabbi, just because the Nodi Behuda said autopsies are prohibited, well, maybe today autopsies are mandated because the Noni Yudah says autopsies are prohibited because the medical value is so far-fetched. What are you going to learn from an autopsy? Today, medical science it moves in 5 seconds. It's unbelievable what we can do. So maybe you're obligated. Maybe everybody has to have an autopsy today. I'm not joking. This is, okay, this is, you have to ask, this is a serious question. But things change, okay? So, I mean, that's a historical change. That's easier to explain because the mitziut, the facts are different. But even when the facts aren't different, the moral assessment is different. The values are different. The role of women is different. The way we interact with non-Jews is how many people consider Christians? I don't want to get to the air of Christmas, right? I hope everybody's coming Tuesday night, the Wednesday. You saw the great program. But how many people consider Christians to be idolaters? Don't raise your hand. But you know, nobody here does. And even if you think you do, you don't. Because if you do, then please don't go shopping Thursdays or Fridays ever. Can't go shopping at any Thursday, Friday in a store owned by a Christian, because that's the first Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. 3 days before their holidays, Sunday, that's a day of, you know, they worship their gods. 3 days before their holidays, you're not allowed to do business with them because they're nice. They're from a goyim, and they're going to give, you know, tzedakah. You close a deal with them. They made a lot of money before Christmas. They're going to be very happy. They're going to go to church on Christmas Eve and make a nice donation to their church because of all the Jews who did business with them. So I can't do business with an idol worshiper. No, we don't do that because we don't consider Christians to be idolaters. Either we follow the view of the Meiri, which is today, may, you know, in the Middle Ages, it wasn't so well known. The Meiri's view that idolatry has very little to do with belief, it has to do with morals and values. So if a religion teaches morality, then, and he was referring specifically to Christians, then it's not idolatry, because the idea of a God in the world is because God is a moral God. It's not so important what you believe in. We have to believe in God. Rak ein yirat Elohim b'makom hazeh. Avram says, look, there's no fear of God. You have to be Jewish. If you have a fear of God, you act in a moral way. So any religion that teaches to act morally is not idolatry. That's the Meiri's view. That's the Rambam didn't agree, of course. The Rambam's view is no, it's idolatry if their beliefs are false. So that's Tosfot tries to answer. It's different. They don't really believe it. They do it. Their parents schlepped them. You know that answer. So it's a scary answer. So Tosva wants to know how come everybody does business with Christians. In the Middle Ages, 12th century, France and Germany. So all the Jews are doing business with non-Jews. What do you mean? The Mishnah says you're not allowed to do business with an idolater. And in the Middle Ages, everybody considered Christianity. Of course, Christianity is idolatry. Christians thought Jews were Christ killers, and we thought they were idolaters. That's obvious. Today, they don't think we're Christ killers, and we don't think they're idolaters. Already the Ramah, many Rishonim say, it's okay. It's, they believe in one God, so they believe God as partners. It's not really a Avodah Zarah. They're Shituf. That's a halakha. They're evolved. Rav Yaakov Emden, many people. I mean, it's a huge discussion. I'm really, there's much more discussion. I'm bumped in. I'm in in Teaneck for Shabbos. So I bumped into, that's why you can, maybe you can tell a different background. So I bumped into David Berger in Shul this morning. So I, you know, David Berger is the world expert on Christian Jewish relations. He spoke last year on our December 25th program, you know, so there's a lot to say on this issue. But the bottom line is we don't consider them Christian, but what avodas are, but what Tosfot says, the one of the reasons he gives is like scary. It's Tosfot says that, it's true they go to church, you know, and that's avodas are, but they don't really believe that their parents schlepped them. They just do min hakavoteim. They just do what their parents taught them. They don't really believe in it. Wow. That to me is unbelievable. It's a Musar Haskel for us. I don't care what Tosfot says on the Christians. What's he saying about us? They don't really, you know, their parents schlepped them to shul, so they go. That's the idea. You have to give kids a little bit of choice and freedom. I think the, who are those people in Pennsylvania who look like, my understanding
is Amish,
they give them a week off to do every Isser in their There's something to be said for that. There really is. And then they choose to come back. So I'm not saying we should, I mean, eat tray for a week, you know, have some fun, whatever, you know, I'm not going that far, but there is something to that idea. And that Tosfot to me is just unbelievable. So that's what he gives other reasons too, but that's one of the reasons. So it's not really idolatry because they don't they're just going through the motions. And you think about all the Jews, let's say think about all the Jews who go to Shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, who don't go all year. Why are they going to Shul Yom Kippur? So whatever, the bottom line is we don't consider Christians idolaters because we can't, because they're nice and we deal with them and it's different. Like, in other words, we give all these post facto justification, but the bottom line is, I mean, we know that's not, like, it just can't be. So I know notice people don't, you know, find this hard, but the halakha often does work that way. I quoted you, Rav Soloveitchik says it the most forceful that I've actually seen in print. Anybody who studies halakha on a serious level knows this is true. In the Orthodox world, it's totally taught not like this because it's dangerous. But anybody who, so on the lower levels, they don't teach you this. What can I tell you? But anybody who knows halakha knows that in 95% of the cases, the posek, the chatam sofer, writes it, they all write it. The posek knows the answer before he looks it up. He has a gut feeling and he has to just justify his gut feeling by looking up some sources and discussing it because he has a feeling for what it is. Okay. Most, you have to know a lot to have an instinctive feeling. Rav Soloveitchik writes this mamash black and white in his tshuva that he wrote, a 20 page tshuva. It's printed in Natty Health God's book collection of the letters of the Rav. You know, after the Rav passed away, they put out many books and manuscripts. So they have a fascinating series about 400 pages of letters of Rav Soloveitchik. So one of them had to do with joining the American army, and there were problems of Shabbos and Kashrut, chaplaincy, and all this shyness. And Rav Soloveitchik, so they asked Rav Soloveitchik, they weren't enough Orthodox rabbis volunteering for the U.S. Army, and that was a problem. So Rav Soloveitchik said, I just want to say that before I, you know, I write the sources, I know the answer has to be that American rabbis have to go to the, can go. And that's for sure the response. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to just look for sources to back up what I know has to be the correct answer. I don't remember the exact language I once quoted, but it's there black and white. And because it's not that they're making up and they're doing whatever they want. As your understanding of halacha, it cannot be. You live in America, what America has done for the Jews, and you can't join the American army because of the problem in Kashrut. We do business. We Christians today are totally different than the Christians of the Middle Ages. So it cannot be they're idolaters. Okay. Okay. Anyways, you can question, debate with me afterwards, but you're showing me what? Central Valley hurts you. That's the talk by Moshe Miller. Yes, he's speaking on Tuesday night. You know that. You'll have it, or you didn't know.
No, I didn't know that.
This is his topic on Tuesday night on Torah in Motion, 8 o'clock, 8 p.m. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Moshe Miller is speaking on Shem Shurim Falhurst. Right, he told me he just wrote a book on the subject. He's going to be summarizing his book. Very good. Thank you, Yocheved, for publicizing, even though you didn't know that. But He's speaking Tuesday night at our program, and then the Mark Shapiro is speaking 8:45 on Hinduism. You know, it's not just Christianity. And then starting 9:15 in the morning on Wednesday morning, I have 7 speakers for 40 minutes each. So that's the program Tuesday night and Wednesday. Reuven, it should be a wonderful program. But so everybody's invited. But yes, that's the talk on Tuesday night. So maybe you'll hear more. I'm giving you that. But let's finish this bracha. We're a little bit off topic. Well, what can we do? Okay, it's almost winter vacation. I don't know when the York, but in Toronto it's winter vacation already. Today's the last. Today is what they call in chat Florida. I'm not teaching this year on Friday, so I'm lucky. But today it's so cool. Florida is overrated day. That's the official name of the day today, because the kids, Florida are the Neva kids. Today they go to Thailand, Mexico, St. Lucas, Hawaii. You know, Florida is like the vacation time. This is it. This is the vacation time in Canada. So they have a chat. Today is Florida's overrated day. They go free. And they said, it's really cool to be in Toronto. Of course, it really is cool, like 50 degrees cooler than in Florida, you know, but anyway, so, today's the beginning of our 2-week winter break, at least for schools in Canada. I assume it's the same in New York. No, are the public schools off for 2 weeks? No. They're not off for 2 weeks. They are. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, let's just finish the bracha. So Melech, right? So all this was staka umishpat. There's a little bit of a contradiction between, politics in Canada. This was a fun week in Canada. Oh, yeah, after the shir. Staka umishpat. That's really what we were talking about. Staka is strict justice, and staka is not strict justice. And that's basically pshara. Only God. That's where we end the bracha. Melech ohev staka umishpat. God is one who loves staka umishpat, but it's very hard. How do you do mishpat and staka where they're almost contradictory? And that's the idea. You have to be like Moshe said, Yikov adina tahar. Aaron says no, he's an ohev shalom and a rodeh shalom. Just very.
And those quick. Are the two words that he spoke to Abraham.
Yes, I was about to say that. Thank you. Of course, we've done the first, right? Staka umishpat is why Abraham was chosen by God. That's correct. We've mentioned a number of times that God said, I know he will teach his children staka umishpat. So this is crucial. And the fact that we use it in judgment tells you, as we keep saying, judiciary is so important to Jewish life. And it's something that was neglected for so many years. Now that we have a state of Israel, that's why I started to say we can really do it. And that's why we spoke last week, the attempts to recreate a Sanhedrin hasn't happened yet, but that's what has to be. What national entity doesn't have a Supreme Court? We don't want just a secular Supreme Court. I want a religious Supreme Court that takes into account all of society. That's not separate from this second. Should be one Supreme Court that, you know, like a Senate with all types of people on. But we're not there yet, but that's what we have to strive for. But just to point out very, very quickly, it's getting late. Melech ohev staka umishpat. So this is the only bracha along with the bracha of tshuva, where it's something God desires. So look at all the other brachas. God is a chonen Adad, he grants knowledge. He's a rofei cholei amo Yisrael. He heals us. He's a mevarech shanim. He gives us economic success. He's a chanun hamarbe lishloach. He forgives us, right? He's goel Yisrael. He redeems the people of Israel. He's a shover oivim. He hurts the evil. He's mishan miftach latzadikim. He's somebody the righteous can rely on. He builds Jerusalem. Only by two brachot do you say this is what God wants. It's very fascinating. In other words, this is what God does, but what God really wants is he wants to do tshuva. He wants harotze b'tshuva. God wants us to repent. It's a beautiful idea. We say that lo, what do we say on Rosh Hashanah? Right after unetana tokev, lo, God doesn't want to keep b'shuvo midarcho v'chaya v'chaya. Thank you very much, Debbie. Okay, thank you. That he should return from his ways. That's what God desired, and he desired staka umishpat, which is why he chose Abraham, because that's what Abraham was going to do, and that's what he did. So that's a very powerful idea. Now, very quickly, why do we change? So, first of all, there was a whole debate about the word hamelech. Also, no other bracha ends with hamelech. Because you're not supposed to end, you don't need to end the bracha with Hamelech. When you have brachot next to each other, you don't say Hamelech. So there were the Abu Draham quotes that in Provence, they didn't say Hamelech. They didn't say. Now, we, of course, know we changed this on Aseret Yemei Tshuva. This is one of the two brachot we changed. And according to many sources, that's not the halakha accepted today. But at one point, or at least according to some sources in halakha, some views, if you forgot to say HaMelech HaMishpat, you have to repeat all Shmon Esrei. Just like if you forgot to say HaMelech HaKadosh, but the halakha today is the accepted halakha, is since Melech Ohev Tzedakah HaMishpat also mentions Melech, that's okay. And that's, you don't have to repeat the Shmon Esrei, but we take out the Ohev Tzedakah, the God loved staka in Aseret Yemei Teshuva, which is kind of fascinating, because on Aseret Yemei Teshuva, we're focused on God as a judge. It's a much more like, wow, we better get serious. God is now judge. It's not that God loves justice. God loves justice. This is a call for mankind to do justice. We have to appoint judges who will be God's partners. When we say HaMelech HaMishpat, we're not talking God's partners. We're talking about, okay, guys, you're lowly human beings. Once a year, God's going to judge you what you're like. Melech HaMishpat. So even though the bracha talks about judges, human judges and human courts, the conclusion is God judging us. Like HaMelech HaMishpat is God is the ultimate judge. And that's, again, this dichotomy or this tension between God's justice and man's justice. But we transfer from God, you know, judges with humankind, so God is HaMelech HaMishpat. Not God loves us to do justice, but God is the judge. So that's it's really a powerful change if you think about it. And what's the big difference? Melech Ohev Tzedakah HaMishpat, Melech HaMishpat. But it changes the whole focus and the whole theme of the bracha is totally different. If you say Melech Ohev Tzedakah, that's a call to man. Whereas you say it's Melech HaMishpat, that's what God is doing. And yeah, we talk about a human court, but ultimately, everything is really God. God might overturn all the rulings of the human court, so to speak. Okay.
I always looked at it is that during that time of the year, our focus switches from us to God.
But it's that.
That God welcome. Is the judge. That's where our brains are. We're not focused so much on how we look at it, but now it's, we're, you know, God is judging us. And at the end of the 10 days, It's fine.
But I'm saying, so our focus about what the theme of the bracha is different. 355 days a year, we have one theme or one sort of concept, and the sort of punchline of the bracha changes in Aseret Yemei Teshuva. We're asking for, it's in the, during all year, we're asking for justice. That's a, it's a very human thing. The judges should know that they're carrying out God's will. They're partners with God. They're done. They're shoot up. They're, you know, all the things we discussed last week. They're partners. But ultimately, it's a human prayer, and it's a human responsibility. During the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, we're turning, we ask for human justice, but ultimately God is the one who's HaMelech HaMishpat, and God judges. Forget human courts. Don't worry about humans. Just worry about God. It like changes the whole meaning of the bracha, which is why I actually, if I explain it like this, I would tend to agree with the opinions that if you forget, you should repeat the Shmon Esrei. But in other words, that's why probably there were such opinions. But Melech is okay. You can say Melech. Yeah, you don't really mean the words. Ohev Tzedakah, you know, like they don't mean it. Like they go to church and they don't mean it. Like, you know, it's okay. They mumble. It's like what Rav Gilad said. Why Shiloh Asani Isha? They asked him about saying Shiloh Asani Isha. This is another bracha, right? Another these tension of changing times. So he said, no, it'll be another bracha I say, but I don't really pay attention to what I'm saying. That was his cute response. I mean, it is, you know, I think certain rules, they won't say it. Yeah, Zeb, what do you want to ask? And then we have to let people go.
Yeah, quick question. And Micha, where he says what God wants from you, he says, Oise Mishpat Vavas Chesed. I'm wondering, is there a big difference between Chesed and Tzedakah?
Is there a big difference between Chesed and Tzedakah?
Because in Micha, he says, Oise Mishpat Vavas Chesed. Here it says, Melech Ohev Tzedakah Mishpat. Why is he using Tzedakah instead of Chesed?
Right. So I said I was going to look into that, right? The difference in Chesed, I don't know. I have to, Chesed is kindness. Tzedakah is less kindness. It's more what it should be, righteousness. What does that mean in practical terms? Because the way here we're explaining Tzedakah Mishpat, we're explaining Tzedakah as more, more in the Chesed category. In contrast to mishpat. See, when we say tzedakah as charity, we mean it's righteousness. We don't give charity means I'm a nice guy. I volunteer to give charity. So that's not a Jewish concept. You're obligated to give charity. We want you to give it as a volunteer, but you're obligated. So there, tzedakah is righteousness. But when we use tzedakah with mishpat, I do think, as I understand it, tzedakah has a much more of a connotation of kindness and chesed. The mishpat is the strict justice, and the tzedakah modifies it, and that's the idea. This lifnim meshurat din and shalom oev shalom yikov adin et hahar versus oev shalom verodin shalom. That's what the Gemara says. Okay, let's just do a quick 1 minute review, and then we'll then take any other questions. So, okay, we spent most of the shiur talking about the importance of compromise. A machloket in the Gemara is a court allowed to compromise. And Moshe's approach is no. The mountain, Yikov Adin et Har, the law pierces the mountain. We don't take anything into consideration. So it just goes straight through you. We don't care. No extenuating circumstances. Nothing matters. It's really a powerful idea. That's law. That's strict justice. But Aaron had a different approach. He was an Oev Shalom. You want peace in this world, and peace and truth are going to be in conflict. If you want peace, and that's the way we follow, you're going to have to do Lifnim Meshurat Din. We said Lifnim Meshurat Din is the idea. You're not in court. It's before you get to court, before you get to the Shurat Din, before you get to court. Then you can do whatever you want. You owe me. I don't have to take the money. I do whatever you want. Once you get to court, it doesn't work the way, but then we have a discussion. Should the court, can the court, must the court really advise the people not to do strict justice? And that's what we do. In practice today, we ask the litigants. As far as I know, I don't face it on a day. I don't know. I don't work in a baiting. I should really ask them what happens when one of the judges says, no, he's convinced he's right and he's going to win the whole money. He doesn't want any compromise and he's mad at the other guy. I want strict justice. So I assume, I don't know, I have to check. Maybe he can get it. I don't know exactly what happens when they do that. But that's the importance of compromise. It's not just going beyond the call of duty. It's acting before justice takes place. And then we discussed a lot of time how moral values, things change. What lifnim meshurat hadin, which takes into account factors beyond the law. That's what it means. So what are those factors beyond the law? So it can, in different generations, it's different factors, and those factors change and our values change. And that's what it means. So that's the difficulty. That's what's making being a judge so difficult, to know which factors to choose, that the extra legal factors, what is moral, what is good, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the challenge. And that's why we have to pray 3 times a day to have sensitive, knowledgeable justice. But knowledge is slightly less important, especially if you're doing a compromise where you don't have to follow the strict law. So you don't have to know every sort of question. Insight and wisdom and empathy, these become important values to know. And then, you know, which values, and obviously your worldview is going to impact on what you think. We discussed a little bit, okay, Christianity, our evolving attitude, just like Christians have evolved their attitude towards Jews, we have evolved. And, the modern, but obviously the Haredi world has a slightly different approach. They don't evolve much the same way, but it's clear. I think anybody living in the modern, even the Haredi living today, they don't do business with Christians, and that's not true as far as, anyways. Okay, so please God, we'll continue next week, and I want to wish everybody well. Let's see any questions here that I did not discuss. Thank you, or if anybody wants to speak up, shoplifting, still is crime, right, restorative justice coming to, okay, Mark Spears article, you got shame from Rafael Hirsch, escaping from the Meshuggah political, but it's not as, you know, in the United States, it's really something. You know what's going on in Canada? Our finance minister resigned to America. But it made the New York Times. It made the front page of the New York Times. Christy Freeland resigned this week before she was supposed to issue the fall financial statement. All right, nobody cares. I mean, all the Canadians know about it, and the Americans don't care, right? But if you want, you can ask me. But it's big. Whether Trudeau will survive, that's the real question. We're in the Sanhedrin. So then we establish a summer trial. Would they reinstate capital punishment? I have no idea if they would reinstate it. But even when there was a Sanhedrin, we know the famous Gemara in Makot, that a Sanhedrin that gave a death penalty once in 7 years is cruel. That the second opinion is once in 7 years. Then Rabbi Akiva, now Rabbi Akiva is living after the destruction of the temple, but there's still a Sanhedrin. Rabbi Akiva says, if I would be a member of the Sanhedrin, Never would we give capital punishment. Never. I'd always find a way out of it. So again, I think the Sanhedrin, I don't think their first act would be in terms of criminal justice of punishment. It would be in, I don't want to say reinterpreting the Torah, and, you know, it'd be in dealing with crisis. How are the laws of inheritance apply in the modern world, right? The Torah says a woman can't get inheritance. So already this is another great example of what we were talking about, changing vows. Already in the time of the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah felt this cannot be. That the boy gets 100%, the girl gets nothing. That's not fair. So the Ramah devised a loophole. Ramosha finds, he says, you don't even need a loophole. Just do a secular will. Dina de machuta dina. And the secular will overrides the laws of the Torah. Because when it comes to civil law, you can override the laws of the Torah. Many people disagree with Rav Moshe. The laws of Yerusha are not really part of civil law. So they have another trick. The trick is the father writes that he owes his daughter $10 million, assuming he has less than $10 million, and that when he dies, so the state has to go 100% to pay off the debt to the daughter. But he says, okay, if the sons agree to give them their equal percentage of the Yerusha, so we can break that bond. So that's just another example of using some trick, because the value didn't align. In the time of the Torah, it made sense. Women had a totally different role. They were guarded by their father and then by their husband. They weren't independent women, went to university, went to work. It didn't work. So they didn't need an inheritance. Today it's very different. So these are things that are very important. And that's what a Sanhedrin can deal with. The real issue today, yeah, people will say they'll get rid of the second day of Yom Tov. I hope not. But what can I say? You know, other things. Okay. Okay, thank you. All right, that's it. I want to wish everybody Shabbat Shalom and all the best. Okay, we'll hope to see you soon. And Rabbi Liebtag on Sunday, if you haven't registered, we sent out the program for Tuesday night and Wednesday. We hope to see you then. Okay, Shabbat Shalom, everybody.
Shabbat Shalom and a happy Shalom.
Thank you.
Yes, happy Hanukkah. Hopefully we'll see you next week. I guess next week we'll probably talk on Hanukkah. I'll see Alan Nisim. I don't know. We'll figure out what we'll talk about. Hopefully something. Yes, Marty, what do you want to ask?
Are they supposed to register for Tuesday night and Wednesday, or is it all one registration?
No, it's one registration for Tuesday. It's a separate registration from this. No, but the Tuesday night, Wednesday is one registration.
Yeah, I want to.
Okay. All right. Shabbat Shalom, everybody. Be well.